thanks, Chair, honorable members and my colleagues. I'm just going to recite the principles, then the drafting will follow. We better agree on the principles. I'm starting with the issue, that issue of the juristic person. The juristic person, we are saying it will be better for us to leave the principal act as it is in relation to the juristic person. In other words, there are no walk-ins for individual or a natural person to receive money from the commission. So that is the principle that we are saying. Let us not disturb the act as it is juristic person. That's point number one. Point number two, we have the issue of proactive funding or proactive research. In the proactive research, we have the following scenario where the commission, in its own volition, accord, it conducts a research, and then the research confirms that there is a need to build that bridge. I'm using that common example that is used here, to build that bridge. But we know that the communities in that area are not constituted in terms of being a juristic person. That is no. So therefore, we are going to suggest in Q, Johan will do the reading here, that there is a clause Q, a sub Q probably, and then it reads as follows. Clause 10.
It's on page 9, in line 38, Madam Chair, paragraph Q.
So it reads as follows. It means the commission up there, conduct or authorize the commission to conduct research on and approve grants to appropriately deserving good causes or recipients that may be funded without application lodged in accordance with this act. So what is that issue is that everything is completed in relation to the research. Naturally, under normal circumstances, we should be taking the money now from the commission and then dispatching it to the organized person who is the juristic person. But here there is no juristic person. What should follow is that we need an empowering legal section, which may read in a drafting language, to say the commission on its own accord will have to manage the funds on behalf of those inverted commas disorganized communities for the purposes of that bridge. Then we need to say as prescribed, therefore it can be done by operationally by regulations and the like, but we need an empowering section here. So again, in conclusion, a section that says a juristic person, it should be read together in a proviso manner that it should not be conflicting with this one. This one should be saying there is no disbursement of funds. It is contradicting the other one. That is, the money should only go to the juristic person. So the two should be reconciled to say subject to whatever the drafters will come with the language. So that is the principle that we are saying. If we can adopt that principle, we will solve a lot of problems. So the issue of juristic person is reinstated, there is no amendment, and then that is the proposal from the department. Thank you.
Are you all on track with that one there? Because that was an issue that was seriously raised. That's page 9Q, And then in terms of the other list, is it the A that was on page 2, is it? Where is it? Well, it's actually not on that, no. But it was something that did come up, put it that way, so it's not yet there. But the reference is made now, and of course was handed out, I assume. Everyone received it? Right. Honourable McIntosh?
I'm pleased the Chief Director doesn't want to suggest an amendment to juristic, or not necessarily him, but the department, because I think that could be problematical. But I understand that subclause Q, and I know we've had a problem with that, and maybe this is where the amendment needs to come in to deal with the question that the department is trying to address. Madam Chair, I just have a slight problem with giving it to natural persons, and I'm now talking about this document. Is this document no longer under consideration? No. Okay. Sorry. Madam Chair, sorry. I've got two new documents in addition to this document in front of me, all right? And I'm looking at the bill, which is Q, and now suddenly Q, a light has gone on. Sorry, that came yesterday with the red in it.
That's why I held up something. Put that down just for a moment, Honourable McIntosh. You know, there have been quite a few documents, and as they didn't quite get through our regular system, they're not labelled. So you've got here, the two documents we got this morning were Clause 413, that looked like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we got this.
Mm.
Am I right?
Correct.
Which one, I think, the Honourable McIntosh is saying? So I think it was pointed out, but let Ms. Nyetse Kenzie pursue that again.
Yeah. No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. My apology. As I was speaking, I said, let us forget about the draft. Yes. So if there are... If there are documents that are going around, as for now, let's assume that they are gagged. There is no document as for now. Let's address the principle first, and then we will go to the drafting part of it.
Okay.
That's our request. I know that it's a flurry of documentation. Well,
let me interrupt just there, and that is why I want to have a brief word with the state law advisor. This, having done this little crafting and redrafting here and a proposal, there was a rethink. So, please can we disregard what is here in red? Okay. Now that we've done that, Honourable Van der Merwe, did you want to comment on simply the principle that was put forward? Would you like to do the same after Honourable Van der Merwe?
Thank you, Chair. I think the question has arisen in our minds through the process of this bill about what do you do if you are proactively seeking to support good causes. What do you do if you have an individual or a group of individuals who are not formed into a juristic person? How do you assist them? It sounds like the principle will now be they can be assisted, but the management of the grant should be done by the commission. So, for example, if you have a Costa Semenya and there's no money in the Association for Athletics South Africa or whatever, but she needs resources in order to represent South Africa abroad, you can't just hand over the money to her. So the principle should be that she should be allowed to receive lotto funding managed by the commission. Am I correct? I think that is worthy of support. that notion. Because you don't want to give it to an individual or a natural person, because there's no accountability structure then. But you don't also want to put it into a big hole that might be some organization that you don't want to fund. You want Custis Dominion to benefit, to represent South Africa at very expensive athletic fund. That's how I see it, and if that is the principle, I think we support it.
No, I don't think one wants to, shall we say, not have a spirit of goodwill, and I think Custis Dominion is a good example, although there is a whole Athletic South Africa and supporting her and so on. But I'm thinking more of one discovers, for example, in the Tukivelgelofarium Singa district, there's a lady who's looking after AIDS orphans, and she's got 40 or 50 AIDS orphans. Now, suddenly, you say, well, I know she can get to Lotto, or somebody knows you go, how can you help her? Now, my concern, Madam Chair, is purely in terms of good governance. To give money to individuals is very risky. Because there's no accountability in a sense. Unless one says, well, we'll pay your tickets or we'll administer it or something like that. But let's take, I think, the practical example perhaps of the granny who's looking after these kids and she needs to get maybe just 200,000, not much money in Lotto terms. So, but then one has to say to yourself, how do we as distributors give that money? Now, either one says it's a good cause, we give the money, let them use it. You know, and then the trouble is you go around and then the granny's son is seen driving around in a double cab Amarok and the money's gone into there and not into helping. And that's the challenge. And if we have a juristic person, then somebody should help that. You can get a constitution off the websites if necessary, as long as there's somebody to help that granny. So it's very easy if somebody can put her in touch with Lotto to simply have a little constitution. It then becomes the right to sue and defend legal positions. It's a juristic person. It's quite simple. So I must tell you, I'm very nervous of this, although I think Q is a good clause because, in a sense, Q is doing the research and it's saying, is the lady, who's, and I'm using it as an example, who's running this AIDS orphanage off her own bat simply because she, you know, she loves kids and she's a godly woman. why must she be denied the opportunity to access funds? I understand the problem, and I think the chief director has pointed out the principle. So I think we should leave juristic persons, but rather create, if one can, in Q, well, if you could call it a loophole or a discretionary position where one can, as it were, by exception, grant, make a grant to a really worthy cause, which is an individual. But I know legally, I know laws don't like exceptions. So that's why I think the chief director thinks, well, maybe I can do it in the regulations. but I just think we must be careful about Q. Although I understand it and I think it's a good idea.
I think the sentiment that no one would disagree with, as you say. But it is just ensuring that we don't have some of the pitfalls occurring. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis?
Chair, I actually support the principle espoused by Honourable Funamadva that if the funds are administered by the Commission, then there really is a great deal more accountability and a great deal less risk. But I have a question regarding the first two words of Q, and while we're on it, we may as well ask about it, which empower the board to conduct the research. And if you read it as I do, I mean, it's slightly ambiguous, but I think it also allows the board to approve grants. Now, I'm not sure that the board should be doing either of those two things. It should be the commission doing those two things. So I would just be slightly more comfortable if we simply said authorize the commission to conduct research on and approve grants to appropriately deserving funds. I don't know why the board should conduct its own research, and in fact it wouldn't have the capacity to do so because it's not, you know, it's not full-time professional people.
Let's just consider that just for a moment without a hand up. Without a hand up. Any hands while one just says a few things. You know, the one thing we seem to be agreed on here then, perhaps Honourable McIntosh doesn't entirely agree with it, but I think that there seemed to be some sense of feeling that all was well if this was done, if the administration of the funds given. Someone mentioned that, I think it's yourself, Honourable van der Merwe, and that was done by the fund. Right. That side we don't have a problem with. The other aspect is who should be conducting the research? Who should be approving the grant? Should it be the board to conduct the research? Let's ask that first. That's the first thing. Am I right? Perhaps we can get a response. A proposal was made that the board authorised the commission to conduct this research. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis?
Chair, my proposal is actually just very simple. The first two words, conduct or, delete. The clause would start with authorise the commission.
Chair, as I understand it, we don't have a draft in front of us because this one has been withdrawn. Is that correct? So let's wait till we get the draft to see how it's been phrased, because I understood that we were now discussing the policy issue and then we're going to come to the drafting when, is that, you know, but we're not on the drafting yet, from what I can gather.
We're not on the latest.
Thank you.
member, and we asked you to go back and review that. Now let's see what's come up. Are we able to look at this, Mr. Nyetse Tenzi?
No, thanks. We would like to address the principle again, but there is section 13 that has been there is a section 13 that has been distributed, and then let's allow Johan to point to the clauses of section, and then we will have to read the distributed document in context of what you will first decide.
Madam Chair, there are many heads involved in a bill like this. Mine is just a little humble one of those heads, and in maybe that's why this process is the way that it is, because of the intensive debates that take place in respect of bills in this honourable committee. Sometimes in the course of those debates things begin to transpire that we haven't been aware of prior to that particular debate. Last night was one such debate. I don't think it has got to do with the fact that it was night time, just generally speaking. So needless to say that during the night we went back and we reflected on what transpired yesterday in the committee. In respect of, can I go now specific to the references, Madam Chair? Page 10 of the bill, line 21. It's clause 13 capital A, and it's subsection 1. I'm not going to read it, but let us state what it contains. Sub 1 deals with a scenario where the minister is of the opinion that no licensee should be appointed to conduct the national lottery. Not to terminate the license or because of some breach in one of the conditions of the license. The minister deems it appropriate on those justifiable grounds that we will return to just now, not to appoint a licensee at all. Then sub 1 tells us that if the minister is based on those grounds of that opinion, then the minister can for a period of 2 years, and let's not focus on the period now. At the moment it says for a period of 2 years can appoint an organ of state to within that vacuum period to do the necessary and conduct the national lottery. Let us stop there. Unfortunately, we have to read the whole section 13A to get the proper picture. Allow me to turn, Madam Chair, to sub 3, which is lower down in line 30. Same page 10, line 30. Here we have ministerial powers again, but the scenario is totally different from the one in subsection 1. In this scenario, there is an existing licensee in place. But because of A, B, C, and D, for instance, a breach in the licensing conditions, or some kind of inability on the part of the person conducting the lottery, the minister is now of opinion that the license should be terminated. Then we must read from line 40. What would happen then if the minister would terminate the license of an existing operator of the lottery? Once again, we see that coincidentally, in one we have 2 years, and here in D we have 24 months, which is the same period. The minister can then, let's assume that 5 years have expired of the license. The minister can then terminate the license and say now for a period of 2 years, an organ of state will be put in place to conduct the national lottery. What happens if the 2 years expires the minister has got an option. Either the necessary work has been done to appoint now a new licensee in terms of Section 13 of the Principal Act to conduct the lottery for another 8 years. We will turn to that section in the Principal Act. That is indeed the period being allowed, a maximum period of 8 years for a licensee to conduct the lottery. So let us keep that in mind when we reflect on the periods. So now the 2 years have lapsed. The minister must exercise discretion, appoint a new licensee to operate the lottery for that long period, or to go to sub one again and to say no. Because of these justifiable grounds, I will not appoint a permanent conductor of the lottery. I will once again institute an organ of state there to do the necessary for a certain period. And after that period, the same kind of considerations will arise. Now, here is my apology and my concession, Madam Chair. We made a mistake. I think the amendment emanated from a debate that was initiated by the Honourable E. Lewis, saying that we should not leave the minister with justifiable grounds only. It leads to subjectivity. It leads maybe to arbitrary kind of exercise of discretion. So we went about and we drafted the justifiable grounds, but unfortunately, within the context of subsection 3, and there is the apology, and not within the context of subsection 1. So allow me, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry to the Secretary of the Honourable Committee as well, for like early in the morning now making, but there was just a night in between in any event for us, for making it available in that manner, but please, let us have as part of the proceedings this morning the single pager which says right at the top clause 13.
Now let's go into the actual clause in right, Honourable Member Merv.
Okay, Chair, so what we are saying here is if I read further onto page 11 of the amendment bill, the presented bill, the substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection, we're on now clause 14, which starts on the previous page, and that actually stipulates the time period for a license. It says 8 years on line 5. Okay. So now we understand where the 8 years comes from. So now in 13A1 on page 24, you are actually saying the minister can grant an organ of state a full period license. That's the bottom line, isn't it? It is. Because that's if you substitute 8 years for 2 years. Sorry.
Okay, sorry about that. You go ahead and perhaps just backtrack a wee.
I had asked yesterday, Chair, where the 8 years came from.
Yes.
Because, and as I understand it, 8 years is the time period for a full license.
Yes.
Okay. So that's where it came from. So you're asking us in clause 13 to substitute 2 for 8 on line 24 of page 10, which would in effect grant the minister the right, if he doesn't find a licensee, to give an organ of state a license for the full 8-year period. That's the bottom line. That's what I'm saying. And then the other bit. As far as I'm concerned, that is the question, because the other bit under 3 that I think you referred to, if 3 is and then you give the justifiable grounds in 2, but 3 is the other situation where the licensee has been, the license has been granted and they're not doing their job, and so it gives the minister the opportunity now to take it back and give it to an organ of state. Mm-hmm. So the first case, in 13A1, page 10, line 20 to 26, is about the minister not finding an appropriate licensee and giving that license for 8 years to an organ of state. That's in simple terms as I understand it. And I always say this so that you can say yes or no, I've got it wrong.
Now, I think that does connect up the two areas and the two relevant areas. Honourable Hill-Lewis?
Sure, I'm not so sure that that's the case. I don't think that the advocate was asking us to consider the time period yet. If you look at the new clause 13 we've got, I'm about to explain to you. If you look at the new clause 13 we've got, it makes an amendment to section 2, the one in red. And that only relates to the fact that there cannot be a continuous display by a licensee of its inability to comply with the terms and conditions of the license if there is no licensee yet. That's the amendment we're being asked to consider now. We haven't got to the time period debate yet, as I understand it. This is the first amendment, which is only section 2 sub A.
Now, let's just break this down. You see, last night, there was the two were conflated last night. Now we're separating them. But the point made is, are you asking us to consider, not to consider the period as we talk? I want that clear.
Madam Chair, no, I fully appreciate what the Honourable Hill-Lewis is saying. I agree. But unfortunately, what we have in red, what we have in red on the A-list are, let's call them new or additional amendments to the initial A-list. But that is what is in black remains part of the A-list. So the period is still at play and needs to be discussed. We cannot say, and we not, do not suggest for a moment that the on the part of the department, McDonald will rein me in if necessary, but the policy stance is that we must propose the period from 2 to 8 years. The Honourable Van der Merwe has done part of our job by referring to what is there in the rest of the bill. The other part of the picture, very briefly, Madam Chair, is actually in the Principal Act, which is section 30. Honourable Van der Merwe is getting me off track here. The section 13 in the Principal Act is the section that allows the minister to make that actual appointment of the person conducting the national lottery. And there we have, not in section 30, but in the next one, section 40, a license granted in terms of section 13 shall be so and so and so, and then the rest, for a period of 5 years or a maximum period of 8 years. So once again, this period is consistent with what you refer to in the bill. And on the very same basis, the DTI would be saying, why is it that for conducting the lottery in those scenarios, a period of 8 years can be granted by the minister? What is different from saying in the scenario in sub 1 that the period should be only 2 years, simply by way of analogy and based on principle?
Yeah, no, I understand that quite clearly. All I'm suggesting is that the section in red in the new clause 13 is actually very easy. It's a consequential amendment, because you can't disobey your license agreements if you don't even have a license yet. So I'm saying let's just agree on that, because that really I don't think should be controversial at all. It's quite obvious, and then we can get on to what's a more controversial point, and that's the time period. I'm simply suggesting that 2 is not controversial at all, and we can agree it.
Well, all of you have begun to agree, I'm just putting these my own thoughts together on this one. And I hope, Honourable McIntosh, you're not going to throw a spanner in the works in my brain. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, your brain can digest a lot of spanners and seems to do it quite well. Madam Chair, just technically, I'm not sure that in C at the end we need that or from a grammatical point of view. And then, to me, D can be more general. It says, and the need to comply with the laws of South Africa. Because it's not just the law of the promotion of black based economic development, it's the law of the country. So does one need to deal with that? And transformation is a very it's almost an abstract noun with very little content, really. I mean, I'm talking in legal terms, but I don't feel strongly about it, but I think the need to comply with the laws of the Republic of South Africa.
Members, no. We're all on track. I hope Honourable Hill Lewis is here as well. Okay? And then just refreshing, now my memory now is also quite in sync with what happened last night. The concerns we had, looking at the red here, we've removed those challenges that we were experiencing when we weren't too sure how many licensees you were referring to, etc. That's been taken out. You've replaced it entirely with this red part. Right. And then the only question that remains then is leaving the earlier one alone and only looking at the red. Do I understand that under clause 13 on the separate page, 2 in red, that we agree on that? Does anyone disagree? No. Okay, we move. Now, I'm not talking of yours yet.
Mm-hmm.
No. What? No, 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 no. Just a minute. No, wait a minute. I saw no supporters. Was not personal judgment. Honourable McIntosh made a proposal. Are you supporting that, Honourable Hill Lewis? You don't mind. Is that support? I think you need to give... You see, you're sounding very much like what the Honourable Van der Merwe says, not very strong. Now, do you support this?
It's not a fundamental issue. If you need a seconder...
You agree. Honourable
Van der Merwe. Okay, now, because I thought it was a very wishy-washy thing, I didn't want to make the argument, but let me make the argument for why I think... The red writing on what I've called A-list 3, because it's the third A-list we've had now, is correct. It actually reflects what was written in A-list 2, clause 13, page 3, but it's rewritten to apply to a situation where a license has not been granted. So it relates to the fundamental issues of the conditions that need to be in place, including broad-based black economic empowerment and transformation, including the growth of local industries and procurement and the transfer of skills. And I think we need to state those things at this point. And that's why I think we should support in a strong way clause 13, A list 3 in the red. Thank you.
Right, we have a supporter for that.
Madam Chair, I think I owe Honourable Van der Merwe a response. First of all, I agree with the clause 2 is fine, and I'm now talking about this sheet, which is clause, I don't know, it's B, letter
A3.
My point is, I'm just now talking about neatness of drafting. I'm not on a political issue.
Right.
Although, look, maybe she smells it, but I don't. It's not my reason. Now, Madam. Yeah, Madam, my point is that we've said A, national government policies or priorities. So that's already a very strong statement. The need to grow local industries, fine. The need to transfer skills and technology. And then we say the need to comply with a legislative framework for the promotion of broad-based black economic empowerment and transformation. Now, I don't know why we can't just say the need to comply with the laws of the Republic of South Africa. We've just passed a new law on BBE. We've, there are other laws which they need to comply with, the Equality Act, the Labour Relations Act, etc., etc. And then you have a clear, neat statement. And more particularly, because it is a lotto, in case one has an international company, they need to grow our local industries. They mustn't buy our gambling machines from India. They must try to get a South African gambling machine manufacturing operation going. They need to train South Africans to operate. They probably already employ them anyway, because we're all so good. But in their places overseas. And then they need to comply with the laws of South Africa. It's not a huge issue, but it just seems to me that we've passed laws and we've got laws in place and we've already in place. Thanks.
You've made the point.
And all should come out at the end of C.
But not limited to that, the national that, or the need to comply. Yes, and the need to comply rather than all. It was what was proposed. You can do all, you've got to transfer skills, etc., or you can do the other. I should have thought you should be doing both, and that's exactly what Honourable McIntosh is saying. Moot point, Honourable Van der Merwe.
But the point is, Chair, it's referring to the thing that's factors including but not limited to this, or this.
Yeah.
So it's all.
But not limited to,
understood.
I wonder how much strong is the point made by Honorable McIntosh, because we do not have an option not to comply with the laws of the Republic of South Africa.
That's legal. The point he's making.
What I'm saying is that putting it or not putting it, we are bound by that.
But that's what he's saying.
So we don't need to make an argument about it being in paper.
I think that's precisely his point. That's why he says remove it. That was the point. So we are saying, and let me make this clear. We've just had these pieces of legislation. We have no problem with A, B, and C. What we're saying is that we do want specifically to mention the compliance with these two pieces of, with that piece of legislation. Transformation, nobody disagrees with, and it should be there for re-emphasis. So let's let that go. You'll be able to talk again when you adopt at the end of the consideration period. Thanks. So I think now that aspect we've done with. Now I'm wondering, I'm not going to listen to any more points on the year period, because it would appear as if this needs to be flagged. I want to get through a few other clauses today. That one we have not resolved. We haven't. And I'm not going to spend another half an hour resolving it here. I'd like members to just think about this and come back refreshed with it next week, a response. Are we agreed? Yes. That's the year only. The year. We're not saying we don't, we're saying we want to study it further. And the implications. Right. Let's move. Right. Clause. Was just a mistake there. Early on that was a mistake. The flagging then will be in the bill. There's nothing there. Right. The one was on the distributing agency. The distributing agency, agencies, but there was a flag out there. That's on page 14, 26B. It may have been that it was just a view that it should have said agencies, which is hardly anything to be moving on, you know. It's not a substantive issue, so can we move? I'm looking around at you. You've got the actual bill. Amendment bill. No problems there. The insertion wasn't a problem. There were quite a few changes with board to DAs. Do you remember that one? And then the whole of 24. But we now face a certain number of clauses there under 24. That was here, 21. There we are. See, this is what we said earlier. And you do have something here.
Madam Chair, you've just referred to all those instances in the A list where we have the word board or the word distributing agency being substituted by the word board. We will recall from our earlier discussions that the policy stance that has been adopted is this, that in future the function of distributing the funds should not be performed by the distributing agencies. That function in future must be performed by the board. That then gave rise to the next issue, which is how can we then keep on living with the name distributing agency if that agency is no longer distributing? But that is just a matter of what is in a name. But fact of the matter is the terminology distributing agency has now become a misnomer and it has to be dealt with. Be it a distributing, from a distributing agency, what do they do now? That is the next question. If they no longer distributing, what is the essence of their functioning? That essence is this, that according to the amendment bill, they will in future be required to adjudicate on applications. They will need to sit and exercise their discretion and cast a judgment on the justifiability or not of an application. But the granting subsequent to that of the funds will be done by the board. Before I get silent for a while again, Madam Chair, and then the next issue arises. If that is indeed the case, there's the name change and there's the change in functioning, and we must keep in mind that the members of the distributing agencies, they had been appointed on contract. So there's a contractual arrangement, there's terms and conditions, there's a period during which the contract will be exercised by those members. If that is the case, this was highlighted, I think, by my colleague, Advocate Hercules, saying that then we should rather reflect on the need for transitional arrangements in respect to those contractual arrangements. I can, from my little perspective, not see how it should not be done. We don't want people to, once this Amendment Act commences, to all of a sudden find that I've got a year left on my contract. I'm no longer a member of the distributing agency, but maybe of the adjudicating agency. What happens to my contract when it expires and the rest? So, unfortunately, Madam Chair, that could not have been done during the short night, but we will reflect on it and come to the committee with some kind of proposal. So having said, so unfortunately that little sequence of events that have arisen because of the change in the functioning of the agency, Madam Chair.
Well, that does leave quite a big gap. Because you're... Oh, my apologies to you all. Thought I had it off while I'm silent. Oh, gosh, there we are. Right, I see I do have to call them Cedric Froehlich. Okay. It's, as I was saying, that's, we'd expected the note I had here was just a bit of a flag. It's turned out to be quite a serious flag, and how soon can we get that crafting back from you, the drafting?
To the extent that I can speak on my own behalf, Madam Chair, I would suggest that we meet on Tuesday. I would suggest that, and given your brief discussion with me last night, that we put some proposal to the committee by the meeting of Tuesday, Madam Chair.
Yes, because we are moving towards the finalisation. It worries me that this is a series of amendments here coming in, one major one, but subheads. So, if you could share with us before the day is out some of the principles that you would proceed on, etc. It sounds like it's very straightforward, based on technical considerations rather than anything else. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Advocate Hercules is quite afraid at doing this. We will just latch on to maybe some transitionals that we find in other acts of Parliament, and we will do the necessary.
please have that then at 9 o'clock. I think we meet at 10, do we? 9 o'clock on Tuesday, so we can distribute it to members. Thank you. All right, now that was not something that came in at the last time, you know, our last time in moving, not last night, but before that, but came in as a result of simply what we changed on from agency and board to agencies and learned that this function was not in alignment. Honourable Van der Merwe?
Yeah, look, I mean, it is now confusing to me, because you've got on page 14 of the bill under distributing agency 26A, which describes the distributing agency as responsible for distributing any sum paid into the fund in terms of this act. But under functions, you take that out and you substitute the distributing agency shall be responsible for evaluating, verifying and adjudication applications. We must identify as the distributing agency and relate it to this point that designates there is another point that talks about who is going to distribute. 26B, 2B, 4B. No, it's not there. Yeah, I saw it here just now. There is somewhere where it talks about, oh yes, the point, 9 persons with suitable combined skills to distribute the grants. Okay, that has now become 4 in the new clause. So I don't know. This thing really needs to be rejigged. Is that what you're saying? I mean,
you know, this is exactly what I started off saying. We've got a challenge with that. It's much bigger than we even think, actually, in terms of putting it all together. It's not the principle. But you've got to be able to clean up the act. That, and it worries me that it's all over the place. And so you're going to have to do a lot of scrutinizing here to ensure that we don't have any slip-up. And I'm just thinking that really the sooner you're released to do that sort of thing, that's why I'm trying to get through the policy flags, you know, the substantive issues. All right? And then the next flag I've got then, insertion new, but there was a problem in 5. We then had another new one, but it wasn't flagged on page 16 here. I'm trying to see if there were any other flags. I don't notice any other flags. Am I right? Right. Now, what I'm going to do, it's just 10:15. All right? Yes.
Maybe we have to get into the detail about the juristic person. Oh, sorry. As a flag.
In terms of the flags. We're going to come back to the juristic now. We've gone steadily through, and I was just asking if we are overlooking any flag. I'm not aware that we are. All right, now we come back. There's a new, we've had 2 new flags this morning, 2 fresh ones. Plus, we have juristic. Right, and that's as a result of the 1 fresh flag. So can we go back to what we first started to deal with? Is everyone on board? It's dealing with the issue of almost the proactive, the introduction of proactive grants, if you like. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Sure, I was under the impression that we were going to get a new draft of that before we could consider it. Have we got it already?
No, that's why I said.
Okay.
not a precedent. We ain't adjourn, as I said before, to someone for 20 minutes to allow for this process to be undertaken. 20 minutes from now, 10:15. Right. That's where we are. Not the DAs and everything, that particular one.
Yeah, I'm lost. Are we now back on Q and jurisdiction? Okay.
But remember what we agreed to, Honourable McIntosh. We agreed that they'd be given some time during the meeting to craft it.
No, I know that, but I just wanted to be sure that we're on it. Now, what I don't recall is last night we were pointed out to the section where jurisdiction is mentioned in this bill. But I know that, but that amendment's out. That's removed. We're going to try to embroider it into Q. Okay. Thank you.
Right. That's right. And in that way, you'll have a tapestry. And you, you're a Jew.
Yeah. We have an internet firm on it.
Yeah, honestly. Right, let's talk.
Thank you.
forgotten all the verses. In the dunya one source. No. Give me any phone call. One source.
Documents,
this is the
one. doing a PowerPoint, right?
Word
oral. I can buy lenses. Okay, no. So let me enjoy this thing, right? I got it. So it means me and my
okay.
And then highlight, and then paint.
Was it under this to be organized as far as
organized?
Yeah.
Is that the bottom one?
It's M-A-T-U-T-I-S, Makutif.
M-A-T-U-T-I-S
at gmail.com.
Sorry?
It's gmail.com. Thank you, Doc. Thank you very much.
I like the way.
I think it is necessary that we start on page 9 of the bill, line 37. It is that paragraph Q. And before I deal with the provisions, let us keep in mind the example that has been sketched by the Honourable Van der Merwe in respect of Custer Semenya. So how does it read? Q, if we read the preceding words as well. The preceding words are to be found on the same page 9 in line 17. Just higher up in line 17. The board shall, in applying the principles of openness and transparency, and in addition to its other functions in terms of this act. And then we go to Q in line 37. Conduct or authorize the commission to conduct research on and approve grants to appropriately deserving good causes or recipients that may be funded, and see the operative words here, without application lodged in accordance with this Act. So, first thing is this. This power can belong to both the board and the commission. Either one of them can exercise this power, and it's already here. We don't need any amendment or supplementary kind of provision that would grant that power. So, purely on the basis of Q, the commission can be approached by people acting on behalf of Caster Semenya. The commission can, or the board, can, without lodging an application, get the necessary grants. The only question that remains is, are we satisfied that if the money is now in the hands of the board or the commission, that they would, given their structure in terms of the whole framework of the law, that they would be dealing with that money in a proper and adequate manner in making it available sensibly to Caster Semenya, given that they are not operating in a vacuum like any other person. They need to operate within the framework of their Enabling Act. They've got the money. The only issue is, does Parliament want to prescribe to the board or the commission on how that money should maybe be held in trust and how it should be appropriated in favour of Caster Semenya? Even if we say that the answer to that is, and please bear with me just for that little while, even if we say that the answer to that is yes, then, and now my colleagues must quickly come to my assistance and give me the references in the bill, what you referred to me just a while ago. Here we go. If we are saying that yes, Parliament should be prescriptive to the board and the commission in appropriating the grants, let us please, and sorry for taking you here and there, let's go to page 3 of the bill. Page 3 of the bill, line 35. The commission may, upon request by the minister, board, or on its own initiative even, in consultation with the board, conduct research on worthy good causes, there we have it again, the good causes, that may be funded without lodging an application. And if we have a look at the A-list, we will see that the word prescribed is being inserted here. An application prescribed in terms of this Act. And if that is not sufficient, let's lastly refer to the next subsection, sub 4. The Commission may, upon request, same thing again, solicit applications for grants from worthy good causes, and then we have a look at the amendment, in the prescribed manner. The moment, so in two other cases in the bill, we've got the words prescribed. For prescribed, there's a definition in the Principal Act that has been applicable in both cases. And here it is. Prescribed means prescribed by regulations by the minister, and prescribed has, in the past tense, has a corresponding meaning. So, Madam Chair, I'm done. What we would like to submit, we discussed earlier, and we were saying that, yes, if the stance is, there should be some kind of prescription in this regard. If that is the case, then it's fine. What we are saying with respect, we do not need any amendment. There are sufficient enabling provisions in the bill dealing with that very thing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That deals with the queue. All right. No. It's not written, but there's very little alteration. There's the linkage is very clear, much clearer than perhaps it was before. So does any member have a challenge with what's been the amendment before us, the proposal? Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable McIntosh.
Can I just ask a quick question? Does Q mean that the board can approve grants?
Not only the board, but the permission as well. And approve those grants based on that provision without application. That is the statutory power being granted to either of those institutions in terms of Q. And it's amplified then by the other two provisions that we had referred to.
Honourable McIntosh before you, Honourable Salam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The, my concern is I'm just looking at the summary of submissions from our stakeholders. And they were very concerned about this element, this aspect. I don't want to repeat what they said because... well, Madam Chair, we know why they would be concerned, and I think we just need common sense to know why they would be concerned. And it, but it does create a kind of discretion almost, although there has to be research and there has to be that of all kinds, but there's no sort of definition of a good cause. And if you had a... dare I say it, a conspiracy amongst the members of the board or the commission or the distributing agency, they could just decide, well, we want these people to get it because, you know, they have a particular favourite group of good causes. That is the worry I have myself, and it's essentially also the stakeholders' concern. I have one question, though. We've now got the board giving approval. We also have the commission. Now, where does the distributing agency come in?
Mr. Tenzi will rein me in if needs be. But in future, the essence of their functioning will be in respect of adjudicating on applications, casting some kind of judgment on the application being justifiable or not, but no longer in distributing the grant if it is approved.
Chairperson, I just want to to check my understanding. My understanding here seems to be saying the board does not require any permission from anybody to do that kind of job. To do a research on an approved grant to appropriately deserving good causes. But the commission can only be able to do so in consultation with the board. The board must agree to what the commission wants to do. If not, they cannot be able to do so.
That's the cue.
Now, the issue here that comes again is that the function, or maybe it's a separate matter, the function of distribution, it's a separate matter.
Chair, it strikes me that the simplicity of reversing to Q as we had it in the bill is going to be the best way of resolving this. I think then we need to ask who will manage the funds.
and how will that be to a worthy cause should they not have any kind of organization around them. So that, as I understand it, will be dealt with in regulation. Okay. It strikes me, Chairperson, that a lot of the queries that we are all asking now will be resolved when we unravel the distributing agency clause. Because I don't think there's clarity in our minds about how the functioning will happen between the board, the, what do you call it? Not the distributing agency anymore. Adjudicating agency and the actual distribution of funds. And I think once we unravel that clause, and I understand that the great minds over there are going to spend some time looking at that, because once we unravel that, I think the other stuff will fall into place. I just want to ask, would, to throw into the pot, it's a question that you can resolve in the resolution of the distributing agency clause, but will the adjudication agency also play a role when the board has identified something, someone, say, through its research? Will it go from the board to the adjudication agency in the same way that an ordinary application will go?
Right. Who's going to respond? Mr. Nyatsi Tete.
No, thanks. We debated this issue to say that research preferably should be subjected to the scrutiny of the sake of a distribution agency. What is it? The adjudicating case, adjudicating agencies. Yeah, it must be put before the adjudication agency for scrutiny, and then so that there can be sort of an endorsement that what has transpired in the research is independently considered by the adjudicating agency, and therefore, as you may recall, the Youth League, one of the Youth League or Commission, they said there must be something in writing to indicate that during that consultation there is sort of an agreement of some sort, but the distribution agencies will have to consider the research and then give sort of an endorsement.
Right. Honourable Waili came in before you, Honourable McIntosh. He was there after, Honourable.
Thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson. I think we have been deliberating on this subject matter for quite some time, but also let's thank the efforts of the officials at our disposal in terms of ensuring that we find a way of ensuring that we deal with all the loopholes that have been identified in the past, because we have identified some of those loopholes. But what becomes important is the strategic intent. What is the strategic intent? Even if we address some of those issues in terms of the bill, but I concur with Comrade Sue that a regulation can begin to deal with some of other issues, because we can't take everything here. And what I was going to do was to persuade all our colleagues for a consensus on the particular matter and allow the process of regulation to ensure that we deal with all other safety valves that may arise, because we can't regulate everything. Because you can always identify people, but as you appoint people, there will be a certain requirement, there are attributes and everything, and people behave differently. That's even within the police services, you employ people to be police, but at times you find criminal elements within the police services. So not that I'm encouraging people to behave in a very strange. So my persuasion was to ensure that we agree on the strategic trust, but also find a way of ensuring that the regulation must be able to cover some of the loopholes that may, as a safety valve on some of those concerns that have been raised by some of our colleagues. Thanks very much.
I think I concur with Honourable Waile. I mean, as I said, what we're trying to do here is to deal with what was, perhaps not a scandal, but it was a great concern to the public of South Africa that money was not actually being distributed. There were clogs in the system, and in so many cases, the feeling was not all, but certainly in many cases, the money was distributed to inappropriate causes, and there were shortcuts taken, and the feeling was that we must do that. And the stakeholders who came here, and I particularly remember the community chest people, and we've had community chests, well, they're worldwide, and they're in South Africa for over 80 years. They've been distributing money to good causes, for decades. So to me, their evidence was quite important. But what's worrying me is that we're now creating more of a logjam, because we've now got the board involved, we've got the commission involved, and we've got the adjudication agency involved. Now, the change of name is very significant. And I mean, I'm comforted by what the chief director says, is that the adjudication agency would adjudicate as well a grant to these, non-juristic, if it is non-juristic, because of course they may find a good cause which does have a juristic arrangement. I mean, a bowling club has a constitution, it's a juristic person. So, in that sense it may be the case, but Madam Chair, my concern is, I want us to make a good law which works and which deals with the concern of the public. And Mr. Honourable Waile has made that point, is that the lottery's distributions have been mired in huge controversy and huge inefficiency and tremendous delays and red tape and everything. And we're trying to make it easier and more efficient and more effective without allowing abuse by people for their own personal friends or interests.
Honourable Hilden.
I just want to ask, I've been trying to get my head around this. I apologise because it is getting rather complex and a little bit confusing, but why is it that the department would like the board to have this power? The board does not have a whole team of staff members, accounting professionals, all of the things that the commission does have. And the commission already has that power that we're trying to give to the board in Q. It would seem to me that it just seems odd that the board should have this power when it's not really the board's job. The board's job is to oversee the commission and make sure the commission is doing its job. Why do you want the board to have this power?
Raj, I hope that's clear. We're back then on Q, clause 10.
No, thanks. The board and the commission accounts to the board. So the board is the principal, and the board can assemble itself and take decisions, strategic decisions. And then in our view is that they must be given this authority to direct this company called the commission. And therefore, some of the things as a principal will have to come from the principal to say, you have the capacity of doing this and this. I don't have the capacity, but from the strategic position of directing the company, because the board runs the company, it should have such powers. I think that is the only rationale. The staff issue, we agree. The commission is full of experts, as an example, but on its own volition, it can do that, but we are saying it should also be allowed to be authorized by the board from its own perspective. I think that is the only rationale. Chair, thanks.
Very much. There's just one or two things I want to clear up before, you know, one moves on beyond this. We've dealt with the flags, I know. We're still dealing with one. One's coming back, okay. But I just want to call a short 5 minute adjournment, please. Barbara.
Ifuna ukuba yini?
volunteers.
So then spend it on the letters. But is it fine? Why is that?
I was very sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me about these two interns. Are you the two interns?
Yes.
Where are you studying at the moment, or did you study?
I studied at Northwest University.
See?
Northwest University.
Say slowly.
Northwest.
Oh, Northwest. Which campus? Bafokeng. Mafeking. Mafeking. And yourself?
University. Northwest University.
Oh, in the entire. Where did you go to high school?
Yeah.
alive to it. I've been there, you know, the Presbyterian institution.
Yeah, yeah, that one. I knew you didn't know that one.
And yourself, where did you get a house? Which part of Mombasa? Kiani. So what do you speak to your grandmother? Tsonga? Now what are your stats? Are you on an internship in the department of DTI? So you work at the campus in Sunnyside?
There do seem to be a number of issues that we're not really threshing out, and as we're going through it, fresh issues have been identified. Now, we were on the, if I recall, the queue, am I right? Just at that time. We were there, and I asked for a short adjournment because we needed to be quite clear what it is that we were wanting the act to authorize. So we can certainly just put a few thoughts on the table. But having said that, it strikes me that a number of the issues that have been raised last night and today are issues that are still require greater clarity for whatever the reason. The build, you know, doesn't seem to hang together. I think that's really what I'm saying. When you look at it, the alignment, the principles, I don't think there's a problem with the principles. Let's get that out the way. But one doesn't see this clearly coming out in the crafting of the bill. And I just think that, but I'm going to hear what other members would like. I've just put that on loud again. My apologies to you. I should have turned it off and then turned it on again by accident. Right. Just hear what members have to say. But I don't want us to leave here today thinking we've only got to do this, we've only got to tinker here, when actually, in my own opinion, there are too many grey areas. And perhaps I may be the only one who is of that opinion, but there does seem to be a lack of alignment between a clear line of authority between the board, the commission, the DAs, the functioning, etc. So let me ask members if they have anything to say in this regard before we put a position forward. Does any member wish to? Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe.
Chair, I think there have been a lot of questions raised about exactly the different relationships between the different structures. And I think we need to get clarity on that. You were referring to Q, and it would seem to us that the board shouldn't be conducting the research. It should be authorizing the commission to do so. But I think what would really assist us would if we could get an organogram showing exactly whose authority is where and who feeds into what and what the process is. Some clarity, in my view, is afforded on page 7 of the A list for clauses 28, where they talk about the sum paid into the fund is allocated for expenditure referred to and held in fund for distribution by the commission to distribute the allocated sum fairly and so on. So there's some clarity there about
the distribution side of it. But it's not clear in some of the other clauses in the bill itself. And for one, I would like to see a diagrammatic representation of how the system is going to work. We understand that the board, the commission is accountable to the board, but I'm not sure that we understand the context of the board's strategic position and exactly the kind of work that must be done by the commission and by the agency, which is now going to have a new name. So, I mean, it would be really quite useful from my point of view if we could have some kind of an organogram about how the accountability structures are going to work. Chair, thank you.
There's a proposal there on the table. Do we have anyone to second that? Thank you, Jordan Hill Lewis, Honourable Lewis. So that has been seconded, and I really believe that that's going to take us through rather more constructively than we have been. And I not that I think the time is wasted that we have in front of us, that we have been fulfilling and undertaking, but it does mean we would want to look at our program in that regard. Some of you may not have the program that I have, which was drawn up last night, but we're looking at next week. And if you look at next week on the 17th, that rather than as part of the process of deliberations, let's start off with organograms and the like. Let's start off with that. An organogram giving us the functions, purpose and functions, purpose, and then the linkage, the lines of accountability, so that it becomes quite clear, and in particular, the clauses in the bill which, enables that function to come about, as it were. And I think that is going to take us further, you see, to then rather quickly after that pursue the amendments, as it were. So on a Tuesday, the 17th, when we talk about the deliberations on any formal consideration, we'll be doing that. Now, at the same time as we have that organogram, it would also be helpful if, I think, in the first instance, we focused on the distribution agencies, which got a new name now. Well, their function is new. They're no longer distributing. They are going to be adjudicating. They don't appear yet to have a definitive name, but, that's what they'll be doing. Now, if we can get that matter addressed and all the little areas, that's after we've all discussed this organogram and lines of accountability, functions, etc., then we deal with that. Because when we started off, that was one of the major issues that we were going to deal with. The second thing was, yes, proactive funding. The whole issue around if it was a single person and not a juristic person, how do we deal with it? But I think we should deal with it in that particular order. And then, hopefully we would be able to get through a fair amount on that 17th, because on the 18th we've got deliberations again. We're also, if we hit a roadblock somewhere, we're going to factor in minutes and things like that to enable you to move ahead. So that's Tuesday. That's Wednesday. And our deadline was to complete this on Tuesday night. Otherwise, we will be coming back in constituency for a day B legislation. That's why I had hoped, we would be able to press on with it, as it were. But it doesn't help to push ahead with something that is not going to give us the legislation we want. Not you want, not that you want, not that we believe will do the job either. So we allocated until 1:30 if necessary for today. But we can talk now, but it's not actually going to take us anywhere. I don't know. Looking at members, you honestly think it'll take us somewhere just to chat? I don't think it'll be constructive. All right? Honourable Pavasa?
Chair, I wanted to propose as well that all of these papers that we have before us now, the A lists and these newspapers and everything else, if they could be put into a form of a bill similar to this, so that we don't have to run from the first paper to the next newspaper to the other, to the A list and to the B list and everything else, because that confuses everybody else. Mm. But more importantly, is that it prolongs the time during which we need to finish. We don't have that kind of time to talk for another 4 weeks deliberating on this thing. We've got to finish it and get done with, because there are other things to do.
Yeah, I think the system, just to respond quickly to that, it would normally go to Mr. Herman's, and then it gets a label, you know, it's numbered, and hence it was called at one stage A3, I think, Honourable Vandermeer. Honourable Salah.
Whilst our position is that of the board that would give instructions to the commission, and then the commission will be doing the functions, it would also be important to clarify the issue of the distribution. And the adjudicating agency. The adjudicating agency, whether it's a separate agency from the commission or it is part of the commission. Because it has got to do a function that relates to the commission as well.
Yeah, I think we did deal with a couple of those, but there's been some confusion since then. So thank you very much, Honourable Salah. If we can embark on that process. Now, I'm looking at Mr. Nyathi Kenzie as the chief director here. You're able to proceed in that manner then. And we look at the time we start on Tuesday. We'll be starting in any event with the Auditor General before we... Right, with the Auditor General, and that deliberations would really only start at 11. I'm just pointing that out to yourself. I don't know if Ms. Naidu is here. Ms. Naidu, we may need a rethink on some of the other issues here if you would join us after the meeting. On that basis then, members, yes, Honourable Hill.
Is there any point in raising issues which are not on the A-list in sections which are still to come now, or should we just leave it all for next week?
What do you mean sections which are, I mean, you mean of the bill itself?
Yeah, of the bill itself, yeah. Which are not on the A-list.
Right. Well, you may as well raise them so that they can look at them anyway.
Okay, Chair, I just want to talk about page 16, section 26F sub 2. This is the clause which essentially prohibits grants or applications for grants by basically fundraising agents, what they call in the industry fundraising agents. Now, Chair, we did receive a few submissions on this, but I really want to motivate that it's not necessary to have that prohibition. I mean, I understand there is from time to time some abuse of the system, but I think that was not adequately picked up because the distributing agencies were not full-time and didn't have the capacity to pick up that kind of abuse. Now that we have a commission which is full-time, which is staffed by professionals and experts in the field, I really don't think there is, or the risk for abuse is far diminished. Chairperson, anyone who's worked in the NGO sector, as I'm sure many people in this room have, will know that you get some NGO workers who are very, very devoted to the service that they provide in the community, but which are really, there's nothing to be ashamed of, they're just really quite bad at administration and producing a professional business plan and that kind of thing. And there are some excellent NGOs themselves who do this on behalf of other NGOs and who help them access grant funding in a range of different locations, not only from the lotto. And they are real experts. I mean, I know of one organization in my constituency which helps the Lions Club, which raises millions and millions of rands, and that's what they do. They specialize in raising money on behalf of other NGOs because they're really good at it. And I don't think that it's right of us to try and stop them from doing that because each to his own, Chair. They're really good at it. That's their talent, and that's what they want to give back to the community, helping NGOs in that way. And they've put together brilliant business plans. They know all of the funding avenues around the world. They go to Bill Gates Foundation. Wherever they go everywhere, and they raise money. And that's what they do. And I feel uncomfortable about prohibiting them from doing that from the lotto. Thanks, Chair.
Madam Chair, I completely agree with my colleague Honourable Hill Lewis. There are people in the NGOs serving other NGOs. They provide IT services, some of them. They raise funds, and they do a fantastic job. But I'm not so sure that that proviso, unless it says in that 26F2 on page, it's line 31, it says, unless good cause is shown as to why such potential beneficiary is unable to make an application on its own. Now, maybe that's not enough of a proviso, but I think a good adjudicating agency would say, well, these guys can't apply. This NGO who is specialized in raising funds for other NGOs can apply on their behalf. So maybe it's covered, but Madam Chair, I don't know, it's, Honourable Hill Lewis may want something a bit more definite.
Yeah, Chairperson, I do want to say that there's nothing wrong with agents fundraising for other NGOs from the private sector. But to act as go-betweens between government and the own NGOs and then factor in their own percentage from the money that is allocated, I think is problematic because I don't think that they are doing it for free. So I do accept that last bit does provide a bit of comfort, but I think we must be very cautious about people whose business is simply to be go-betweens, like what you call this in the labour market, the labour brokers, that kind of stuff. That is what I think we must prevent at all costs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody else had their hand up before,
Honourable Mova, Honourable Salah, Honourable Hill Lewis. Yeah, I think this is a difficult discussion because I can see that some agencies, I mean, the big ones employ a full-time person just to make applications for funding, you know, the big organizations. The little organization may not have those skills. But at the same time, the lotto would want to know that the money that it is distributing is going to the cause that it wants to go to. If the agency is taking 20% of that, the lotto may justifiably be, you know, missed about that, because that's not what the intention of the money from the lotto was for, 20% for this person to fill out the form. There must be some compromise position that I think we can come to here. And I think maybe we need to drill down a little bit into what just cause they are referring to here, and why, how that could be, is unable to make the, it must show good cause. So we may need to drill down a little bit into what that good cause would be.
Honourable Salam?
Most of what I've said has been said already, Jefferson. Safe to say that application for a grant is not automatically suggesting that you are going to get it. No. The discretion as to whether the applicant is application is successful is made by the board. Mm-hmm. So until then, we cannot preempt that because they are a good organization to help people when they make an application, it will be successful. But this clause neither prohibits them from applying. It doesn't. It doesn't prohibit them. They can apply, but they must justify the good cause, to which we will get a clearer understanding of what it means.
Thank you, Honourable Salam. Honourable Hilton.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm not 100% satisfied that this you know, caveat is sufficient, because you know, I'm sure that a small NGO probably could hobble together an application of its own. It just won't be very good and probably won't succeed. I mean, all of these are hypotheticals, you know, as Mr. Salah says, but you know, just on the balance of probabilities. Chair, I completely take the point that you don't want companies profiteering off social grant applications, off lotto grant applications. But in the vast majority of cases, these organizations are themselves NGOs and are therefore non-profit. So if you think of someone like Community Chest, they might take 2 or 3% to cover their own costs, but they're not making they're not creaming a massive percentage of the top to run a profitable business. I would also be quite uncomfortable with that. I'm not sure if that is the case. I haven't come across such a business yet, but the vast majority of these organizations are themselves NPOs. Where I disagree with the Honorable Salau is that while this isn't a blanket prohibition, it certainly is a major indication that the AA, as it's now called, the adjudication agency. The AA, as it's now called, is not very keen on such applications, and I'm not sure that we should indicate that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Waili.
Thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson. I think first and foremost, the NPOs, and you name them, it's an international phenomenon. And secondly, we don't underplay the role they are playing in the society, in terms of the Good Cause program. But furthermore, they are NPOs, which indeed have done a lot of work, which we can say at times the world class deliver to some of our people. But also there are some who have failed the beneficiaries. So that's a fact. And as we move forward, I think we must be consistent when we're dealing with some of the issues of maladministration. The issues of maladministration must not be accepted both in government, in the private sector, but generally in the society. So that consistency becomes important. But also I agree that I can make an example. The community chest in Tate is one of the NPO that have worked with them, and they demonstrated high capabilities but also quick responses, and how do we ensure that when we deal with some of the weaknesses, we don't disadvantage, because not every place, or what I can say, every place is unique. The situation in Cape Town will not be the same like in Kala, in Transkei. And if I offended somebody, I'm not saying people of Kala cannot present business plans. That's my worry about the example that I've made. So I'm then saying there are those situations where you find that our people in a number of areas, countries, develop business plans, and how to ensure that they are not compromised in terms of what we seek to do, because the intention of this law is to ensure that we deal with all bottlenecks, but also we ensure that people who are the beneficiaries must not be compromised. So to me, we must strike that particular balance of ensuring that we deal with the loopholes, but also find a way of ensuring that these NPO have got a better way of working with Lotto, but also with almost everybody in the society in terms of addressing the plight of the beneficiaries, without using Lotto as a mere income generation. So I think to me that's important.
Wanted us to remember that one of the reasons we wanted an amendment to this bill was that we needed to make it easier for organizations to access the funds, particularly with regard to the cumbersome nature of the application forms and all sorts of other requirements that were required previously. So if we facilitate all of that, there might not really be a need for these other people who apply on behalf of and so on. And so that it would be necessary to retain that clause, of course, with that last bit that provides for really a real justification why a particular group of people would not altogether be able to apply on themselves. So we must just remember that.
One of the members raised the issue of, you know, possible abuse of some of the funds going, if we make this available, that a juristic person acting as an agent may be able to represent those who aren't and facilitate the application. And often these are NGOs, if you like. Often. Now, I know the danger, and this is what the USAID guard against. If you are in such a position yourself, they inquire as to your full breakdown of your budget, including your bank statements, etc. So it's quite clear there's a recon between the budget and the bank statement, and one of these reasons is to ensure that the grant is not used on the NGO's administration, you know, the negative of the actual intended beneficiary itself. And I just want to refresh your memories. I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, the CEO of the South African TB Association, which was a very struggling association, as we all know, and a very, very good, you know, an NGO that did a lot of good work, but the CEO was at one stage not only getting a muck for the job, but at that particular stage working a contracted 3-day week, 5 hours a day, and getting at that time 90,000 rand a month. Now, I don't think, you know, now, well, I've given you in a kind of extreme case there, and yet they were struggling to address the basic issues that they had prioritized that they would support. And yet they were getting private funding, but also government funding at that stage. So I think there is always the need to be concerned, of course, about the possible abuse, and because it does happen and we have that experience. But at the same time, we've also heard 3 different points on the table here, positions, and one is from the Honourable Kwabasa. We also need to simplify these forms. We know what the grants were like at one stage. We know a lot of the people who were not complying with income tax because they didn't know how to start filling in the top form. And then that has been simplified. So we are aware that the simplification of an application would do much to reduce this particular challenge. That's the one. The second aspect, of course, is the one that was put forward on the table as well by the Honourable Van der Merwe. Look, maybe we don't have to say either or, but there's something in the middle, a compromise that we may be able to reach in this particular respect. So I think that we ourselves want to explore that as members, you know, of the committee. I also ask the DTI and Advocate Stratum and the State Law Advisor, of course, to assist there, also to look at this, because it isn't preventing, as someone pointed out, I forget who, perhaps it was yourself, Honourable Van der Merwe, it says you can do this. But, you know, there has to be a good cause, a solid reason why you are doing this. Why can't that person apply him or herself? Why not? Or is it simply because they never heard of the lottery giving you these funds or whatever? What is it? Then surely that would be the job of the lottery to advertise itself better. Anyway, I don't want to carry on just talking for the sake of talking. The reality is we're not going to absolutely throw that out. We're saying we'll discuss it among ourselves as well, and we'll come back with firm proposals. Will you do the same thing? I think the ANC will do that. I'm looking at the ANC members. I'm looking at yourself, Honourable Hill-Lewis, and come back with something substantial, okay? And Honourable McIntosh, I think you're on either side, as it were. Right. Now, that's right. And now if we move on to page 17 of the Act there, I'm looking at what I may have noted, because remember there were no flags here. But members also didn't feel entirely happy that we were going through this so fast. But along with the issues which may have been raised, about consultation and the like, and the issue around suitability of applications and the need for qualifications. I don't think we had a problem there. Looking at towards the bottom of page 17, you've got what is it, section 29, hang on, 28. The principal act is hereby amended by the substitution of subsection 1 of the following. So much of any sum paid into the fund as is allocated for the expenditure there shall be held in the fund for distribution by the distributing agency. Now, I'm hoping, because at this stage, and I'm not sure which agency we may be talking about, you see, because we never got to page 17 fully. We said there were no flags. Yes, Honourable Van der Merwe, and now we're facing the same point, which we may leave.
That one has actually an amendment in the A list. I think this goes to, the point made by. All of those ones are substituted.
Yeah.
Yes,
all of those.
What we said at the beginning.
Yeah.
Only the DA situation, not anything. I think since then we've had a further.
Well, I think it goes to Honourable Wabasa's point, where to say let's get a clean A list. Because all the stuff that we've been saying today is going to affect the naming of the agency, so all those ones, the whole of page 17 and half of page 18 are substitutions in the A list that we've got. So let's see how that alters in our clean A list.
Yes.
We'll have to call it a Z list.
Yeah. No, we're not talking about that issue, the decision we've taken. We've taken
yeah.
a decision.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. We've taken one aspect. We've dealt with everything with respect to simply this confusion. But there are other aspects that we didn't deal with, and that's what I'm pointing out. If you look there under clause 28.
On the A list? Or on the...
on the bill. Yeah. So I'm not dealing with the issue we have already dealt with, all right? Now, if you look there, and you do have a reference down here, simply with a reference to the different ministers that would be consulted. Do you see that there? The ministers of arts, culture, science, and in the national sphere of government. Now, I have a question in that respect, in that regard. It's a legal clarification I want. We've seen the names of these departments change after 5 years. And what happens if in this piece of legislation already you have listed it so specifically? Is there a particular legal law or something that covers those changes that occur after a term of government? Yes, but we said that we would perhaps bring back some of the issues that were there. Remember, under the distribution agencies as to where you would distribute it.
Now, we're not talking about the agency as an agency now, but the beneficiary.
I think I'm with you, Madam Chair. The Honourable Van der Merwe has just pointed out that according to the proposed amendments, not even the A list, but what is already in the bill at the moment, the references to all those portfolios of ministers will be omitted from the text. But in fairness to your question, Advocate Hercules might come to my assistance, but there is a provision to the effect that if by an act of the President there is a name in the portfolio of a responsible minister of the Cabinet, then automatically, irrespective of the references that we find in the Acts of Parliament, it would be deemed to having the new portfolio name. But within this context of our bill and our A-list, it does not even come into play, Madam Chair.
No. The final issue
with
respect to that which I had in my book here was the question around the areas or what we would, what can I call them, sectors that could apply to this. The issue around the different sectors, or would there be a on a pro rata or whatever, is it going to be evenly distributed, or what with funding
between arts, sports, culture, and I don't know what else, and miscellaneous, if you like?
Someone asked that question in relation to miscellaneous.
Yes, each sector will have its own budget. Yes. And then, generally, if I'm not mistaken, my colleague can confirm, the arts, sports seems to be the biggest. And therefore, there is the issue of distributing to them, to giving them more money because they have got more stakeholders and the like. And then the RDP, as you may know, it has funds but nobody was utilizing it. That's why we came with the issue of redundancy. So I think it can go pro rata, but they differ in size. And then therefore their budgets also differ. And then the miscellaneous one, we may say there were not many applications. But because of this issue of proactive funding that we are introducing, we may find that it will also be using its money in a faster rate. Although proactive funding is not peculiar to miscellaneous funding, it will also happen in other areas. Yes.
Is there any, who raised the issue around miscellaneous last time we met with E249? I see you raised in relation to, I don't know, these two tools, and I haven't given what you raised it under, and I haven't got it on the new section here. We may have just, maybe it was just a clarification. Yeah, I'm sure it was
just that. Because that's the only outstanding question I have then. I don't have anything else. Unless somebody else has one.
I don't.
Well, I take it if silence means nobody has further comments or questions. Just to remind us where we are. We've decided to check. We've got work. We're going to review some of these points ourselves and come back with some proposals. Do you recall that? And the technical team, led by DTI as well, are going to come back with the structure, the organogram, the functions and the accountability. You're also going to check right through this act to make sure that every reference to distributing agency is effectively dealt with, and there is a harmonization throughout so that we don't trip up all over. The final point on that one is with respect and a reminder that we are meeting on Tuesday at 11 o'clock and the venue will be here. The venue will be here. GAG, yes. No, but for them, it's, 11 o'clock, right, the committee will come in at 10, Manco is at 9, right. Honourable Hill Lewis?
Could you let us know why it's necessary for the Manco to engage with the Auditor General in a closed meeting without the rest of the committee here?
The reason it's called a MANCO is its very title, Management Committee. We may have to manage, for example, whether it's one or two meetings or what. We may have to manage a number of issues. But if you like, we can have more meetings here and extend our meetings. But the MANCO, there's a MANCO in every committee. And we're coming to the end of our bills. We haven't met with the Auditor General, and this will be the second time we're meeting, is that right? We're with him the last time we dealt with the Auditor General at the committee's request, you may recall, over the NCC, and were asked to iron out certain things. Do you recall that? Right.
Sure.
So that's what a management committee is to do. It's not to take policy decisions. You not, you know, absolute decisions on a bill. You do to manage the work.
Right. Look, I haven't come across a government body who is supposed to come to a parliamentary committee first engaging with a management committee before. I'm not sure if that is the practice in other committees, but it doesn't really sit well with me.
What is your actual problem? Because it's been going on for the last... It happens in this province as well, in the provincial legislature.
I'm asking why it is that an AG is coming to meet with the MANCO of a parliamentary committee when they're actually coming to account to the committee.
They're not coming to account to us.
Well, to report to us.
They're not coming to account to MANCO.
Oh, to MANCO, right.
There is a difference. No one accounts to MANCO except staff on work they've been given.
So it's just about scheduling?
It's not just scheduling. It is also to indicate who may be required to be here. Unless you, the committee wants to take over that onerous job as well. So that's what it's about. It's essentially, in fact, it is multi-party. It's not an ANC structure. We've got a study group as the ANC. This is a parliamentary structure. It used to be the IFP. Of course, the IFP is not there at the moment. We asked, who is it from the Minority Front who hasn't joined? Now, the Minority Front, you will recall, was supposed to come back in a letter. They have not yet done that, despite four letters from this committee to them, requesting to learn who was the minority person they were agreeing on. I don't know. We can't take that decision for them.
But, you know, that's, in fact, I know your chief whip could explain this a lot better than I do, because they took the decision to have a MANCO.
Yeah.
Thank you.